Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. If you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
My name is Mike Fava, based in Manitoba, Canada, and I'm a 25-year entrepreneur. So nowadays, investor, advisor, mentor, author, speaker, but after 25 years in business.
So can you tell me more about like your entrepreneurship journey? Like what made you want to get into entrepreneurship in the first place? And I guess like what your first company was?
Yeah, I grew up with a single mom and we were pretty poor. So entrepreneurship came from the desire to make something of myself, make some money. And when I combined that with my newfound passion for health after I lost over 100 pounds, I got into the health food business. So we pioneered hemp foods at Manitoba Harvest and grew that business from 1998 through to 2019.
So in 2019, then you exited the business and now you're more like, you know, doing advising essentially and investing.
Yeah, we sold the business in 2019 and I'm a recovering entrepreneur, so I'm not fit to operate a business, but I do like growing businesses. And so I have a portfolio of companies that I'm invested in and I help the founders on their next stage of growth.
So obviously now in 2024 that, you know, things are changing in terms of social media or different strategies become like a very much red ocean. Like it's very competitive, right? So like in your opinion, in the CPG space specifically, like what do you think brands have to do to stand out in 2024?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's the big challenge is not just one way to do it, but I think a strategy and some tactics that are more time tested, especially if you're in food and beverage part of CPG, you got to get your product into people's mouths and you got to do that in the most efficient way possible. So a lot of times that's starts out close to home, right? Think about the farmer's market kind of mentality where you set up and sample your products over a weekend and maybe you could get, you know, a couple hundred or a couple thousand people to try them. I find that approach of that hyper local focused approach still working today. And that worked for us, you know, 25 years ago. But the great thing about marketing in 2024 is you could add on social media. So when you're doing these local events, create content, shoot videos, shoot pictures, tell stories with that content that you can then amplify digitally. And then, you know, with tools like your own website, direct to consumer or Amazon, you can get people interested in your products in other states, in other cities, and be able to sell to them. And so even though you're hyper local focused on the execution, you could amplify that digitally and sell online that way.
But do you think that brands can scale exponentially without running any paid ads? You know, I mean, I guess grow like organically, or do you think that you need to have a certain amount of budget and invest in Meta ads or Google ads, things like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the advertising space has changed a lot and it continues to change. So I don't think you need to advertise. But again, every brand's a little different depending on the product, depending on the category. Ultimately, when you're thinking about marketing, you're thinking about like the 360 degrees of marketing. Traditionally, most companies try a little bit of everything, right? And see what works for them. That's one approach. Like, and again, being in the food business, we've always put an extra larger portion of that budget to getting samples into people's mouths. Because when you're in food and beverage, you got to show people that it's delicious. You can communicate that in an advertisement, but it just doesn't come across the same as if you get the product in their mouth.
So is that kind of how you grew, like you mentioned, right back in 98, it was more of going to farmers markets, getting the food into the mouth of people locally in Canada, like in your community, and they would try the product and they loved it and they kept, you know, coming back. And from there, because obviously back then it wasn't the e-commerce, you could say, landscape that we have today, right?
Yeah, and not necessarily farmers markets, but product demonstrations in store, consumer shows where consumer health shows, like yoga events, anywhere that there was a healthy minded consumer that was going to learn something new that weekend and buy some new products, we would set up there and sample and pass out brochures and convert people and sell product right there. And they'd go home with a basket of our product. And I'm a big believer that if you have a great product, then you could take the time to educate people one-on-one about why they want to buy your product and how to easily incorporate them into their lifestyle so they become more of a lifelong customer. I think that's the benefit of a consumable type product like food and beverage.
For sure. So I guess now in 2024, you can mention that you're investing in certain companies. So what do you look for when you're investing? Are you investing in the CPG and food space or other industries? Like, what does that look like for you?
I'd say I'm sticking to my lane, right? I have a personal passion for natural, organic, better for you food and beverage products, and because that's how I like to eat, and that's how I like to stock my house. So I'm looking for venture growth companies, so like $10 million plus in revenue already, not startup, of products that I want to have in my house that I eat on the regular basis, consume on a regular basis, then meet with founders that I connect with, and there's a fit that like we want to hang out and we enjoy each other's company and they're smart founders. And then I could look at the business dynamics of like how set up is the business to grow, what's the gross margin structure of the business, is there competitive moats around the business, like either manufacturing base or IP on their product. But that's how I look at opportunities for me to invest. And also I've learned that I want to be actively involved in my investments and play an advisory role or a role in government on the board of directors or even chairing the board. And so I have to like the product and the founder that much.
For sure. But like when you're investing, are you focused just on Canadian brands or do you look at brands in the US too or
Yeah,
globally?
half,
Like,
half, half my portfolio is in Canada and half is in the US.
awesome.
When we built Manitoba Harvest to a $100 million business, about half of the business, just a little under half, was in Canada and about half was in the USA, and then a small slice internationally. So I'm very familiar with both the US and Canadian markets.
What would you say is like the biggest difference between both markets?
Yeah, there's a number of differences. Like the US is like 10 Canadas, right? So you could take a region of the US and focus there. So like if you're in Canada, you could be, if you're from Eastern Canada, your first approach would be like, get a foothold in your city and then Eastern Canada and then try to become a national brand, right? If you're in the US, like, and you're from the Northwest, you could build a strong business just in Seattle, just in Washington State, and then maybe just Washington and Oregon and the Northwest, instead of thinking, oh, we're going to become a national brand. Like a national brand in the US, you probably got to be doing $20 million of revenue to actually be a very, very, very small national brand.
For sure. So it's more of just like the biggest difference from what I'm understanding. It's just like the sheer, you could say, population size, and that's pretty much
One
about
of it,
it.
yeah, and that also brings on a bunch more competitors, right? So if you look at a potential category in Canada, maybe like cold brew coffee, maybe there's a handful of cold brew coffee companies in Canada that are all fighting for the shelf space, but in the US there could be hundreds of them, and so then you just have that much more competition that you're that, you know, it's, it makes it more of a red ocean, or a darker red ocean, and that makes it tougher to get outside of your. If you have a good thing, you're always going to have a chance of being a good business locally. But it's really, can you expand into another competitor's territory and beat them at their game in their own kind of hometown?
For sure. So for the CPG brands that you work with, like how important is it for those brands to have a strong e-commerce strategy?
It depends on the business. I think, like, yes, econ I'm a big believer in omni-channel, but that doesn't mean your own direct consumer on your website, right? Just some things it just doesn't make sense. Like frozen foods probably doesn't make sense. Refrigerated
Yes.
is even tough, right? But then
Yep.
even down, you say like, hey, you're a pantry item. Like you're a great, I don't know, like pasta company or a nutrition bar company. Well, a lot of those pantry kind of items, people choose to buy them from resellers like Amazon or a specialty reseller like Thrive Market in the US or well.ca in Canada. And so making sure that you have coverage there as part of your omni-channel approach, I think is really, it's beneficial and necessary for a business nowadays, but not necessarily, direct sales on your own website.
For sure. So you're saying that, like, obviously, if they're not like, frozen or refrigerated, that like it should be like a big part of the strategy, but they could be successful doing just Amazon as opposed to D2C from the website. Because like you said, I mean, like certain products, like a protein bar, maybe some sort of energy drink, right? People might be more keen to buy that on Amazon versus from their website.
For sure. Yeah, and Amazon sets that standard, right? So and it plays into like if you're just starting out, I would say, and going back to what we were talking about earlier, like if you're from Austin, Texas, like do a local approach to Austin, Texas, and then get on Amazon so that people in other states can go and buy your product. And if you're making marketing activities in Austin and your local retailers and your local festivals and places to sample your product, and you're sharing those stories on your Instagram and TikTok and social platforms, then people will find you and then go to Amazon and buy. So you're already covering it, and that's a really a much less risky approach to start out nowadays, instead of trying to expand too quickly, too fast out of your home state. But outside of, like, omnichannel is the online and omnichannel approach is that mechanism to get out and get more customers without the risk of the overhead of going there.
For sure. So obviously now in 2024, AI is a big conversation. So what would you say is like the role of AI when it comes to e-commerce nowadays?
I mean, I think AI is huge, right? It really takes the skills of a founder and the capacity of a founder a lot farther. So if you're a one-person business, and even tools like ChatGPT on helping you with a certain strategy or helping you with market dynamics, or as specific to what you are saying online, helping you with advertising hooks or content for your website or content for your reseller's website. You could use it for script writing for if you're going to be doing some videos or you could use it for social post content creation. I just think it's probably better for the strategy and for the outlines of that than too much copy and paste. But there's so many different ways that over the last year that AI just makes a founder's time in the day 2 to 3 times more powerful. I use it myself as a in my business kind of, and I know that in the last year, I've just been spending at least 3 days a week, like a 30-minute session, just experimenting with different AI and see how it could assist me in my day-to-day operations. And I think every
That's
founder should.
awesome. But do you think like AI adds value in the form of like, like the customer experience for e-com brands, like, chat, things like that?
Yeah, I think it's there's lots of tools being developed, right? So again, depending on your business and your go-to-market strategy, you always want to be looking at tools that make you more efficient. And we're living in that time where there's an explosion of tools, and they're all AI-based, so they have a lot more kind of functionality to it. But it should be. I'm always a believer. You should have a system and an outline for what you want to do. And then automate it, right? And don't get too carried away by installing all these tools before you really have a need for them.
For sure. So what would you say is like the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you got started in your entrepreneurship journey?
Yeah, I think having a clear roadmap for your business I wish I just ha knew how important that was. Like, I've always been a believer in business planning. And like not the 50-page written business plan, but having an outline of what are your sales, marketing, operations, and finance strategies and tactics for your next stage of growth. I know that if I would have learned and adopted some of that sooner in my entrepreneur career, it would have just served me better, because the more clear your roadmap is of where you're going, and making sure that you have the finances to accomplish that over the next fiscal year. You're going to have less risk, and you're going to have more likelihood of success of actually accomplishing it.
That's awesome. So if we're going to have this conversation again in 1 year from now, where do you see things going for the companies that you're working with, or even like with the e-commerce space in general?
Yeah, it continues to grow. I think you're going to see, Amazon keeps on taking a bigger and bigger market share. And so if you haven't started your flywheel already on Amazon, I would encourage you as a brand to be thinking about that. And And the same is true for people on the other end of the scale that are e-commerce only. Like they grew up as a D2C brand, but because of advertising changes, because we're out of the pandemic now, people are, and because there's consolidators like Amazon, people are buying less direct to consumer. So if you're not available on the other resellers, or you're not available in some brick and mortar stores, you probably want to be thinking about not a pure D2C play, and what is that next stage of omni-channel presence look like for your brand? Because I think it's very dangerous to just be, for a lot of D2C brands, the landscape's changed enough where they're seeing real softening. And I think that's going to continue.
For sure. So if somebody watching that's wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website or social media, I guess, best ways to get in contact with you?
Yeah, all of my, everything Mike Fata is at mikefata.ca, MikeFata.ca. And I'm really active on LinkedIn. So people that want to connect, connect with me on LinkedIn, send me a note just saying you listen to this podcast, and happy to connect.
Awesome. Well, Mike, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, you're very welcome, man. Thanks again for having me.
Thanks. All right. Bye.